I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you along as you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 260. And what's that smell?
What smell?
The smell of fall.
Fall is definitely in the air.
You know how we know it here in the desert?
No, you don't have any leaves in the desert.
None that really change color, but you can tell it's fall because the temperature doesn't go over 105.
Normally for us here in the Bay Area, it seems like September timeframe. Like, it just seems like there's a little, I don't know, temperature is a little cooler, but there's also just the different smell in the air. So is that also true in the desert?
Yeah, the quality of light changes. You know, the days are shorter, the light's a little more slanty.
Yes, Nancy was complaining about having to get up in the dark.
Yep, it's a little darker. All those things that happen in the fall, like eBay Open. You're getting ready, right? You're going to the studio.
I am going to a studio event. I am excited.
Where is it again?
The one that I'm going to?
Yeah.
Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
That's old.
And Rocky.
And Ben Franklin and kites.
Yes, and the Liberty Bell.
And the Liberty Bell and cheesesteaks.
Oh, that's right. I have to have a cheesesteak. I've heard there's a couple different kinds, so I have to read up on which one I should have. Or maybe I'll try both.
You have to, because it's only fair. And I think they're right across the street from each other. I don't remember their names.
So Frankie's, probably.
Could be. Are there other events, studio events on the way? Is there one in Phoenix?
There is. So it's Philadelphia, Atlanta, Chicago, and Phoenix.
All right. So Phoenix is sold out too now, I think.
They all are sold out, Griff.
Yeah. That's the news for this week. That's the only news we have. They're all sold out. We warned you.
Yes, you got to sign up. You got to sign up when signups start.
And if you procrastinated, sorry.
There is an alternative, though, for some folks.
What is that?
We've got 10, or is it 11? 10, I'll say 10, be conservative. There are 10 seller meeting kickoff parties. And these are events that are hosted by eBay sellers. And we are sending them some swag for their events. And most of them have reserved a place. And so there'll be some food. And those will be also on Tuesdays. And you can find them at ebay.com/seller events. And we'll put that link in the transcript so you don't have to try and guess what I just said.
Exactly.
So, Griff, enough about Open. Who's our guest this week?
Well, this week, it's eBay seller Michael Swope. He's the chief operating officer for 1-4-Silver. Michael is really well-versed in niche selling based on what he does business on eBay, and he has some advice and some tips for anyone interested in offering a niche product line on eBay, like us.
Yeah, Michael's a wonderful seller, and if you're in the Akron area, Michael's having one of those kickoff parties. So,
oh, good.
You can check out his kickoff party. I was back to open. Sorry, I thought we were going to end the open and move on to our guest.
Well, there's nothing really else to talk about. There's no other news, at least not in the script here, except that studio events are sold out.
Yep, that is it.
That's all the news we have. We have a very full episode with Michael. It's a pre-recorded interview that I did while we were on Seller Week. And we have a really long Q&A because although we only have two questions this week, we have a whole series of posts that I solicited from folks on our Facebook group about the weirdest shipping experience you ever had. So we're going to read those as well. Let's go to our guest segment, Post Haste.
Sounds good. I'll be back for We Got Questions.
Perfect. Our guest this week currently serves as the chief operating officer of a company called 1-4-Silver. It's a small business located in Akron, Ohio, and it provides high-quality tableware to consumers around the world. Before joining 1-4-Silver in 2012, our guest attended the University of Akron, where he graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science and then went on to study law at Florida A&M University. Michael oversees 1-4-Silver's day-to-day operations and leads a team of customer service-driven professionals who are experts in the tabletop industry. Under Michael's leadership, 1-4-Silver has grown from a business born on eBay in the basement of a one-bedroom apartment to a 31,000-square-foot facility that sells on multiple online marketplaces and employs 6 people full-time. Welcome back to the podcast, Michael Swope.
Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful to be here.
Remind us again about the business and what it does and how you fit into it.
We're, like I said, a small business in Akron, Ohio, and we specialize in flatware, crystal stemware, and china. And we sell goods all over the world. We're authorized retailers for 30-plus brands in tabletop. We really have quite a selection in our inventory for people to shop from.
How difficult is it to operate a business in this type of niche?
I mean, we love it because flatware in China is our passion, right? We know the space really well. And I think sellers who focus on what they know and what they love do a better job at representing the product on eBay, and thus it sells better. You see a better flow through in your sales if you're passionate about what you're selling.
So I'm curious to know what your house looks like, Michael. How many sets of flatware do you own?
So it's so funny that you say that. My husband recently, about a year ago, opened up our flatware drawer. And up until about a year ago, everything in the drawer was just kind of a mix match of whatever we had got over the years. And he looked at me and he said, "Don't you work for a flatware company?" I said, "Yeah, why?" He said, "Then why do we not have matching flatware?" I said, "All right, well, that's a good point." We went shopping in the warehouse that next weekend, and we finally do have matching Vera Wang flatware at home. So
you managed to stay very niche in your inventory and yet grow it to a pretty large business. What's your advice to other eBay sellers looking to emulate your success in this niche?
I say that unless flatware or China is your passion, right, stick to what you know and sell what you know. But for us, it's our passion. So we want to help customers either find that broken piece of China that was grandma's that they really miss, or we want to help people add to their current collections, or we want to sell them something brand new that they can use in their homes and every day. So there's a lot of verticals we operate in, the flatware in China and crystal space, but I think it's absolutely important that we are helping people every day live better at home.
How knowledgeable do you grow over the years about these specific niches when it comes to flatware, dinnerware, and stemware?
As you sell a product, you really start to learn more and more about it. For me, I deal with our portfolio of brands, so I'm mainly focused on our new products in the business. The owner of our company, James, he focuses on the used and secondhand side of our business, and he is a product guy to his core. I would put him up against pretty much any expert in the world in flatware in China because his product knowledge is amazing and off the charts. He impresses even our brands. He sometimes knows more about their brand than they do.
Yeah.
So it's great.
So you deal with mostly the new stuff that comes in, and the owner, James, is more focused on older stuff that may not be produced anymore.
There's a big demand for pieces that are gone, and the China of yesteryear is becoming more and more difficult to find. So Lenox is a major brand in China, and they produced a lot of China here in the United States for years. And during the COVID recession, they moved all of their production overseas. So now people still want those USA-made pieces, and they're becoming more and more difficult to find because that inventory is no longer being produced.
So it's not just the age, but it can also, what's important to customers is where it was made.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we specialize in is not just offering the brand name and the piece type, but we specialize on the back stamps and the hallmarks on pieces. And we really do a good job as a team at work photographing and detailing all of that information in our listing so that customers have the ability to make an informed buying purchase.
I remember the time when Converse sneakers moved their operations overseas, and suddenly US-made Converse became a collecting niche. People started hoarding them and buying them, and they're much more sought after.
Yeah, we see that a lot in flatware too. Oneida for years was an iconic American brand, and Oneida hasn't produced any flatware in the United States since 2005, but people still think of it as an iconic American brand. They look for the older vintage pieces in Oneida that are stamped USA, and those, again, are becoming more and more difficult to find, but we have a large selection of that stuff in our inventory.
Michael, during the pandemic, people started to focus more on their homes because they were stuck in them. So they started doing things like buying a lot of stuff for the house. I'm assuming that you saw this in your business during the 2020 to 2022 shopping era. What trends did you notice during that period of time? Or were there differentiating trends?
Yeah, I think so. I agree with you that people, since they were stuck at home during that time, they improved their living conditions at home. You know, you didn't go to restaurants to eat out anymore. You were eating at home. You were cooking at home. People were upgrading their dishware and their china and their flatware because it's something they were using 2 and 3 times a day as opposed to maybe something they had only used 3 or 4 times a week in the past. So we saw a huge uptick in our sales during that time. And the good news is most of those customers we've retained. I think the largest demographic for us that found their way to us during the pandemic was the 60 plus crowd who were used to shopping in retail stores and hadn't shopped online. But during the pandemic, they were forced to figure it out. And then they realized how easy and simple it really is. And the good news from that is we've retained those folks as customers.
That is a up part of the pandemic, if there was any, is it introduced online shopping to people who just never had ventured in there. So
yeah, or who just were adverse to it in general because they thought I'd just rather go to the store. But you know, now, even though retail is picking back up at this point, a lot of people are still turning to the online platforms in that age bracket because not only is it easy, but there's value there. Like retail stores have a lot of overhead, where online stores can provide a bigger value because they don't have so much overhead.
The business, One for Silver, actually operates on more than one platform. What kind of challenges does that present to your team when it comes to keeping track of inventory? And do you use a system or software to manage that?
We use a piece of software called Channel Advisor, which is kind of the industry leader in multi-platform software. It helps us manage our inventory across all the platforms we sell on. We sell on eBay, we sell on Amazon, we sell on Walmart.com, we sell on our own web store. But eBay is still our largest volume site. We often say we wouldn't be where we are as a company today without eBay because they really got us our start 25 years ago online, and now our presence is large in the online space.
Well, of course, we appreciate you being on eBay. Thank you.
I appreciate everything that eBay does for both us as a business and for the customers. I can tell just because I deal with a lot of our customer service across all those platforms, and it seems like eBay has a happy group of customers, which I think is important in the shopping experience.
Yeah, I agree. I've had some experience buying from other platforms, and right now I'm in a situation on a platform which will be nameless. That's not a very pleasant experience. I'm not happy. And it's something that I wouldn't have faced if I had found the same thing on eBay.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts about eBay is that there's so many both buyer and seller protections. And they're really the only marketplace who gets that 100% right in offering protections for both. Because here's the thing, you can't just have buyer protections. You got to have seller protections too, because sellers will only invest where they feel safe too. And eBay does a great job at making the marketplace safe for everyone.
Yeah. Although it's always a challenge because it is a balancing act and you got to stay up with trends. Speaking of trends, I know that we're getting ready, everyone who sells for the upcoming holiday season. I'm sure that you guys do a lot of research on what the trends are going to be. What are you guys doing now in order to prepare for the holiday season?
We're in buying mode right now. This is the time of year where we really stock up our inventory. And we adjust our current inventory and we look at what we have and we really make sure we're prepared for our fourth quarter because that is for us our largest and most voluminous quarter of the year. Really, any time where there's holidays where people sit down to have dinner is where we excel. So Thanksgiving and Christmas being two of the biggest days of the year where people sit down together, that's certainly where we're going to see a lot of our volume. As far as trends go, in flatware, mid-century modern design and those clean contemporary patterns have long been mainstays. But there's becoming this emergence of texture that's starting to trend in the industry. So textured handles on flatware and designs that both look and feel amazing in your hand are becoming popular among the younger generation of buyers. Our flatware partners have some truly amazing patterns that can fit everyone's. Now with glassware, we're seeing an emergence of crack cocktail and glass-specific drinkware making its way into both homes and man caves across the country. Products like tequila glasses and Moscow mules are super popular right now. So we're trying to keep those products in stock and make sure we have a good selection for everybody. In China and dinnerware, we talked about it earlier a little bit, but we're seeing a trend more towards casual elegance and a more modern way of living there. Today, consumers are looking for dinnerware that meets their everyday needs, as opposed to the china that sits in the cabinet and only comes out at the holidays, right? So manufacturers have started offering sets that includes mugs as opposed to teacups and saucers in an effort to meet this changing market. Now, that said, we still see quite a demand for the vintage china patterns of yesteryear, and specifically for us in offering people replacement pieces or additional items to collections that have been passed down to them over generations.
So if there's a missing piece, they're out there looking for it.
Yes.
Michael, does your company do any sourcing online at places like eBay or other marketplaces besides just selling them?
We do. We have save searches in eBay, just like a lot of buyers do. We look for stuff that people are getting rid of or may not necessarily know what it is, or or know what they have. And we have a good understanding of what we sell. So we absolutely use the eBay site to both buy and sell.
Well, that's good to know. I'll keep an eye out for that when I find my next set of teacups. Teacups being a joke here on the show, it's kind of an in joke because that industry kind of did slip off the radar for a while when it came to very fancy, over-the-top Victorian china.
Yep.
But everything comes back.
It does. And the good news about things like china and crystal and flatware, it never goes bad. Even a lot of our purchasing is long-tail merchandise purchases. We know we may have this inventory for 3 to 5 years or longer, but it's not going to go bad sitting on our shelf. And sometimes when things are discontinued, it even becomes more popular and it becomes more, the value increases as people are finding it harder to get.
In the previous years, with this unusual marketplace, were there things that you discovered about the market in itself that you'll be incorporating into this year's, for example, holiday strategy?
Well, our holiday strategy this year is just to make sure we have enough product for everyone and that we don't run out. We looked at last year's inventory and some of the more niche collectible items we carry, because while it's not our core business, we do sell some ornaments and some other things that are still from our major brands in tabletop, but they are not specifically tabletop items. Like Aura Fours is a glassware company we deal with, but they have a wonderful collection of ornaments. And last year, we kind of ran out of them before the holiday season was over. So this year, we want to make sure we're fully stocked and prepared for everybody that needs to buy their inventory before the holidays.
So I took a look at your listings, and about 60% or so seem to have free shipping. And this is a big topic of discussion when we talk about things that may be more than a few pounds to ship. For example, dinnerware sets or maybe a set of flatware. How do you decide your free shipping strategy for items where sometimes it's free shipping and sometimes it's not?
So all of our flatware ships for free. When it comes to china and dinnerware and crystal glassware, it's a delicate item. It requires a lot of packaging and a lot of materials to get that there safely, which is one of the things we excel at. Our shipping specialist, Brian, is amazing. I can count on two hands the number of packages we've had broke in 10 years.
Wow.
So he's really gifted at what he does, and he's an asset to our company for sure. We try to charge a little bit for shipping, but most of the items, even when we're charging for shipping in glassware or china, it's highly discounted. We usually pay more to ship the item than we're charging. So we kind of build our pricing strategies, just kind of build that into our cost when we do it. I don't want to give free shipping on china because people that want multiple sets, they're kind of really getting soaked then. So we do the paid shipping on china and glassware really as a courtesy to our customers so that they can get the most value when they're purchasing more than one.
I see. So how much you're going to charge for shipping is dependent on how much they buy.
Correct. Yeah.
And I assume you use eBay's promotion tools to do this?
We do. For example, a 20-piece set of china per se may cost $18 to ship, but if you buy two, it's going to cost $23. It's $18 for the first set and $5 for each additional set. If we did free shipping, we'd have to assume everyone was only buying one. So it'd be, we'd build that $18 into the cost of the item. And that's really unfair to the people that want to buy two or three. We try to do it in a way that makes it fair for everyone.
Right. You just have to have some pre-calculations beforehand, and then you can adapt your volume pricing so that it's beneficial for you. You're not having to lay out too much for shipping from the cost of the item, but also the customer can take advantage of it as well. Yeah, I'm a big fan of volume pricing. I'm surprised how many people don't use it.
Oh, it's amazing. It's one of the best tools that eBay has offered. That and offers to watchers are two of the best tools that eBay uses. We utilize both of them every day.
But like any tool, they have to be utilized correctly or they're kind of a waste of time. I get offers for like 5% off an item thinking the item's $60. This isn't really much of a discount.
Right. Most of our offers that go out are 10% plus. So we're usually sending offers in the 10 to 20% range.
Yeah, that's what I do as well. So, Mike, a lot of folks look up to sellers like you because you guys are so successful and they want to know how they can emulate that success, especially sellers who may be offering a specific type of inventory that just isn't moving at the speed that they would like it to move. What would you say to a seller who asked about this?
I would say don't be disappointed if your sales are kind of slacking. The summertime tends to be slow for everyone and sales tend to pick up in the winter months. I think in the summer, people are outdoors and they're not online as much. And that's probably why you're seeing some slower sales. The summertime is also a great time to look at your listings and make sure that those photos are on point and that they're high quality photos of your items and that your descriptions are accurate. and you've got all the item specifics that eBay wants. I know those can be a pain, but they really help boost the item in search. So you'll want to make sure that your items are ready to go for the fall. That's my advice.
Great advice. Michael, I want to thank you. It's always a pleasure and really happy you were able to stop in the studio and talk with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Michael Swope currently serves as the chief operating officer of a company called 1-4-Silver. That's the name 1 and the number 4-Silver. We'll put a link to his eBay store, as we always do for our seller guests, in our transcript for this episode, episode 260.
You got questions?
Of course you do. We got answers. And this week we have two questions and a topic.
A topic?
Yeah, a topic.
What does that mean, Griff?
Well, a few weeks ago, Brian, I asked our regulars on our eBay for Business podcast Facebook group to share their weirdest shipping stories, and they did not disappoint.
I remember that.
So we'll read a selection of those, but first we have a question from eBay seller Sharon F. Would you do the honors?
Sure. This was a question Sharon posted on our Facebook group. I have 100 different listings from a line of dolls, all with best offer on them. Is there a way to, in bulk editing, add a maximum percentage below the listed price that I'd like the system to accept? If I have a doll listed at $100 and I want to auto accept offers of no lower than 10%, for example, $90 plus, can I do that in bulk? Each doll varies in price. Just an FYI, since they are very popular, for the first month, I'd like to do 10%, and then each month, I'll add another 5% decrease. I would accept that. I don't want to program that. Just mentioning in case someone wonders why I'm only wanting to accept 10% right now.
Okay. Interesting. I like the way she thinks.
Yes.
So she wants to be able to lower her auto accept price by a certain percentage at her choosing, you know, at a time and date when she wants to do this. So Sharon, you can bulk edit the auto accept amounts for all current active listings with best offer. It's really easy. And in fact, you can also use this feature that I'm going to tell you to just add best offers or remove them. But we're going to use this to edit the auto accept amount for existing offers. So the first thing you do is you go to Seller Hub and then the active view, and you use one of the quick filters along the top, the one that says offer added, to then limit the shown active listings to just those where you've already offered the best offer feature. So then you're just operating with those. But once you've limited all those so that everything on your active view is just the ones with offers, you select all on that page, and you can select up to 500 at a time, and then click edit, that little edit button on the top. This will open all the listings in the bulk edit tool. And once you're there, all you have to do is select all. You can click the box on top so you select all those best offer listings, and then click the edit button on the top of that page, and then select the option for offers. It's one of the many things that you can edit. You'll get a pop-up window in the screen. In the pop-up window, you want to select the Allow Offers option, because the other option underneath that, there's an option button that says Remove Offers. So you want to say Allow Offers, and the minute you click that, the window will open up, and there's something called Auto Accept Settings, and then you select the one you want, and you can select no change to these, the auto accept. You can say increase by, decrease by.
And on the increase and decrease, you can do percentage or dollar amount, correct?
Exactly. So if she wants to do percentage, say she wants to lower the existing auto accept amounts for all of these best offers, she can select 10%. It'll apply to all of them. You save the edits and you're done. And then you can come back in a week or two if you want to change those from 10 to 15%. You do the same thing, and you can do 500 at a time, and it's really easy.
That's fantastic. So that's good news for Sharon.
It's really good news. Our next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by seller Janet, who sells under the user ID Vermont Eye Candy. Guess where she's located?
New Hampshire?
No. She says here, hi, and greetings from Vermont. I love listening to your podcast, usually tuning in while I'm cooking or jumping on my mini trampoline. From what some of my buyers tell me, if they're using the eBay app on a mobile device, they are required to pay immediately when they buy something. In two instances in the last couple of weeks, I've requested that the buyer not pay until I can invoice them. One time was to adjust shipping for a multi-purchase transaction. The other was to change from media mail to priority mail because my buyer was in a hurry. Both times they say, eBay didn't give them the choice but to pay as part of the purchase transaction. It's added so much extra work on my end since they paid and then adjustments had to happen. I know that when on the desktop version, buyers can purchase without paying immediately. Thanks for your insights, Janet, and her store name, as I said, is Vermont Eye Candy.
Well, Janet, the request total link that appears in checkout when using the desktop to view eBay, in fact, does not appear in the mobile app checkout.
And so your buyer is not seeing it, so they can't actually send you through the mobile app a request for a discount total. Brian, have you ever talked to the team about this?
I did ask the team responsible, and they told me they are aware of this missing link and that adding the request total link is on their roadmap, but they don't have an expected delivery date for the future. So Janet, in the meantime, you might want to test using a shipping discount promotion instead of relying on the old request total for discount combined purchases.
Ooh, Brian, you're so smart. That's a great suggestion. Here's why, Janet, that Brian's suggestion is really good. You must have been selling on eBay for quite some time. I think this is a legacy activity that a lot of sellers and some buyers have been using since the beginning of eBay. And it's just
inefficient.
It's inefficient. Now, we're never going to prevent buyers and sellers from using this option, but it may be an opportunity for you to test something different, like Brian said, which is instead of having to negotiate post putting everything in checkout and then coming up with a total, you're extending that period of time. You can make it easier by providing shipping discounts for multiple purchases, either by using the promotions manager tool that's for shipping discounts, or if you're up to it, not a lot of sellers like to use it. There is a combined shipping rule that you can apply for these, but it's not easy to use. But I think it's easy to test the shipping discount and see if that works for you. I've got some things that I've been doing lately that I don't have to negotiate these things. So for example, I'm starting to charge partial shipping for some things. When I set up a listing, if it's a 2-pound listing, I'll say it's 1 pound. And then when it comes time to print, I'll change it to back to 2 pounds and I will pay the extra out of my amount. That way I use this to keep my prices competitive and the shipping lower than other sellers, knowing I'm not rolling the entire price into the item. What I'm doing is allowing for some leeway. So instead of it saying that it's $9, it says $6, depending on where their buyer is, and that's more attractive. And then I'll pay the $3 when I purchase the label.
And Griff, do you do that via the marketing tab in Seller Hub?
This isn't the shipping discount. This is just it's kind of a little hack. Say the item weighs 2 pounds, then I will say it weighs 13 ounces, and then it'll display a lower shipping price for the buyer to pay. But when I print the label, I have to put in the actual weight and the difference between what they paid and what the new charge is for the label because it's more expensive because it weighs more. I pay out of my pocket for the shipping label.
Okay.
It works. It works for me. Yeah. And it keeps my shipping prices low.
And this is yet another reason why you might want to test baking the shipping price in partial or total into your item price.
Yeah.
So doing so can help speed up purchase decisions.
This is the whole thing, right?
Buyers don't have to think if it's free shipping or it's flat rate shipping or those kinds of things, then it's just done.
Yeah. And I think that's, you'll get the same sort of effect with the shipping discount promotion where they'll automatically see whatever discount in the cart when they put the items in, and then they don't have to contact you for a total. So you're making it quicker and faster.
And though it's not elegant, you can always suggest to a buyer on a mobile that they might want to check out on desktop and order request a total for combined shipping, though it's not very elegant and it requires an extra step from a buyer, which is not ideal.
Right. The eventual solve for this will be the request total link appearing in the mobile app. And as Brian said, the team's aware of it and it's on their roadmap. Those are the questions for this week. Now it's time for you and I to read a selection of the posts on the topic, weird shipping stories. I thought I'd start with one of mine to get the ball rolling. And this actually happened to me back many years ago, over 20 years ago, when I was living in Salt Lake. I sold a 3-foot-tall Italian 18th century wooden turn gilded altar candlestick. It was lovely. I think we got it in Italy, in fact. And it sold for a really good price. So I carefully package it, as I normally do, in double boxes, and I used a lot of packing material, and I sent it USPS to the domestic buyer. And about 3 days later, I get a message from the buyer, and he's outraged. He says, "How dare you ship me a box full of splinters?"
Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought, what? I assured him I shipped an intact candlestick. And he had sent me photos in a separate email of the splinters in the box. And it was definitely the box, and the splinters did bear a resemblance to the altar stick. But I said, look, don't worry about it. I'm really sorry this happened. I'm going to send you a refund right away. But a few minutes later, he sent me another email and he says, you know, on closer inspection, I was looking around the box and I found a sheet of paper. It's from UPS. It's a form letter. I remember it says something along the lines of, our apologies, your parcel was accidentally run over by one of our old forklifts.
I was thinking, like, how the heck could it become all splinters? Oh, my goodness.
So the buyer apologized, and I told him, look, don't worry about it. I sent you your refund, and I'm really sorry because neither you or I, we're obviously both pretty smart collectors who love these things, and we don't want to see them destroyed. I was able to recoup my loss using that form letter because I contacted USPS, and I said, you got some splaining to do. And I sent him a scan of the letter and photos of the box, and they refunded me, obviously. I think that was the... But what amazed me at the time is that USPS, even with one of their forklifts, ran over the box and they completely destroyed the contents. They still shipped it onto the buyer.
Yeah, you'd think at that moment they would turn around and say, okay, this isn't going to meet the buyer's needs. Send it back to the seller.
Or just disposed of it and said, we'll give you a refund, right? But then Walter Smith responded on the underneath the post. He said, USPS does this because they simply have to prove it wasn't stolen or lost. In fact, they always do that to a damaged item.
That's actually good info from Walter.
Yeah, Walter's a smart guy.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Because otherwise, you'd say, no, someone at USPS, you know, it's sitting in their house.
And nobody at USPS knows how much it's like a knife in the heart when you've destroyed a valuable 18th century antique.
Yeah. Well, and you think about it, like, you collected it initially because you really liked it. This buyer obviously saw it and was passionate about it, and you said it was a higher priced item.
Yeah, it was. Several hundred dollars, yeah. When you think about it, so that candlestick lived in some remote, obscure chapel in Italy since the 18th century, yeah. And then it was carefully wrapped and, you know, it ended up in an antique shop. It got carefully wrapped, shipped to the United States, was in my collection for a minute, and then carefully rewrapped to send to a new collector, and USPS put an end to its life. So
what did the buyer do with the splinters?
I remember the picture that they could not be repaired. I mean, it wasn't as though it broke in half. It was literally smashed by the forklift so that it was just painted and gilded splinters.
Yeah.
Really expensive kindling. Why don't you read a next story?
Mandy Kennett shared her unusual shipping story. She posted, this is a story as a buyer. A few years ago, I purchased a children's Christmas book for a friend who had lost theirs, and they wanted the memory back. The seller was in Alaska. I am in Eastern Canada. Tracking showed the item going to USPS Los Angeles for sorting. Then it went to Italy, and then it came back to the US, and eventually ended up being delivered to me. All told, it took a couple of months and arrived after Christmas, but my friend was still happy to get it. The seller was mortified, but as a seller myself, I knew it wasn't their fault.
USPS decided that the book needed an Italian vacation.
That's obviously Christmas time sorting and so many packaging, and something got missorted into the wrong bin and never got out until it arrived in Italy.
I wonder if it was any wiser for the trip. Maybe you could speak Italian.
Yeah, ciao.
Well, right after that, Michael M. posted this. Mandy Kennett, I had a similar thing happen with a postcard. My friend was graduating from RISD, Rhode Island School of Design, and was going to have a photography show at our high school. He mailed 3 invitation postcards to friends here in Birmingham, Alabama. It was me and 2 others. My 2 friends got theirs and were talking about it. And I was really PO'd because he hadn't sent me one. 3 months later, I get mine, and it was postmarked Birmingham, England. Oh, boy.
Items need vacations too, clearly.
And then seller Jess O had this story. Once I shipped $400 worth of hockey jerseys to Australia using our cross-border shipper to create a USPS label. My husband dropped it off at Canada Post by accident, and he was with a USPS label. We tried to retrieve it. It was already gone, but somehow, and we don't know how, it made it around the world to a very happy buyer.
Oh my goodness. What are they doing with hockey gear in Australia?
Hockey is everywhere. We have a hockey team in Palm Desert. They're called the, I don't remember what they're called because I'm not very sporty. Why don't you read the next one?
Seller Sharon F.'s shipping story was more inspirational than weird. She posted, I wouldn't call this unusual, but I would call it very special. I've been working on selling items from my father-in-law's estate. I listed his dual CS 1246 turntable, and I knew I'd figure out how to ship it when the time came. The buyer had served in Germany, and it had the exact turntable. He'd always dreamt of having it again to listen to his LPs. As my father-in-law had served, this made it special. Then when the buyer told me he had served near Heidelberg, Germany, just as my dad had, it made it even more special. My dad had died 3 months before the item sold. It has been a hard year of loss for us. In this turntable was a lot more than a purchase. It contained hope and memory. My husband and I frankenboxed a great fit of double boxing, learned online how to properly package a turntable with all the right preparations. It took nearly 2 hours to do it all correctly. Wow. I rolled it around the living room and felt it was ready for its adventure. We impatiently waited to hear it arrive safely, and it did, and our buyer was ecstatic. These kinds of stories we never forget. Let me tell you, there's one right way to pack a turntable, and all other ways are totally wrong. You need foam padding, peanuts, bubble wrap, a microbox for the small pieces. It's a process, but you can clear a good amount if you know what you're doing.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Well, then seller Mila Z had a story where USPS was not at fault. So we got to be fair. We can't keep blaming USPS. We have to show when they really shine. And she wrote, back in 2018, I had two international sales within a day. Back then, I didn't use printed labels, and I wrote names and addresses using black Sharpies. Once both packages got to eBay International Shipping, they would stick an international label on top of my label. In a few weeks, I received a message from one customer who got the wrong item, and then the second one also contacted me. I know for sure I couldn't mess it up because I checked camera recordings to make sure I contacted eBay and explained to them, but they didn't want to hear it and told me it was my fault. I didn't know what to do after speaking with a few eBay reps. I was sitting and just clicking through my eBay emails and noticed one of the pictures the buyer sent me, and I saw a name and address that I wrote using a Sharpie. It's clear as day, she says, it's seen through the label that eBay put on it. And this is how I proved it was eBay's fault and not mine. And this must have been, I don't know if this was eBay International Shipping or the old Global Shipping Program, but
probably GSP.
Someone had scanned both packages and then mixed the labels up at that point. So it wasn't Mila's fault. It was eBay's fault.
Yep, it definitely was. Well, Chris B. has a story that reflects well on USPS.
We like that.
I shipped a package to Hawaii via first class from New Orleans. It got to Hawaii in 2 days.
Wow.
The buyer was impressed. I was stunned.
It must have just, everything fell right for it. It must have gone on the right plane. Or a speedboat.
Yeah, 2 days. That's incredible.
So good for you, Chris. I wanted to end this with one of my stories, which to this day just boggles my mind. It's another example of the mysterious ways that USPS works. And in this case, it was a miracle. Let me tell you, this was years ago, like in the early 80s. And we had an acquaintance who will be nameless because sweet as pie, but not the brightest bulb in the marquee of life, let's just say. And this person sent us a Christmas card, except they didn't have our address. So in the front of the envelope, handwriting, she just put the following: to the two guys who live in the brick house, Vermont.
Oh, my goodness.
That's all it said. And we received it. And it was sent from the West Coast. So it made it through the USPS system to Vermont. And somebody in Vermont, I don't know how they, I mean, could we be the only two guys living in a brick house in Vermont? I don't think so. There's lots of brick houses.
She didn't even have the city?
The city, no zip code, no name, no nothing. Just Vermont.
Well, see, you had a reputation even back in 1980s.
Oh, brother. Some postmaster looked at the envelope, rolled his eyes and said, oh, those two again.
That's kind of like some of the addresses that you ship to in Europe, like where my cousins live in Ireland. There's no like number in front of the street. In fact, oftentimes there's no street.
It's but there's just a name.
Yeah, you have the person's name, and then you have like a town, and then it's, you know, a county in Ireland, and they just know where to go. It's not like a street address.
This had nothing except the two guys who live in the brick house. To the two guys who live in the brick house, Vermont. That's all it said. I wish I'd kept the envelope. I think I've lost it over the years because it was postmarked and the stamp was canceled, you know, with the
But they stamped it. Yeah.
So,
You should have kept that one. You should have framed it. Like, that's like,
I should have sold it on eBay.
Or you could have, like, you know, given it to the U.S. Postal Service to say, you guys do deliver.
I mean, how did you figure this out? Anyway, so that's our, I want to thank everyone who sent those or posted those stories. We love it when we solicit for particular types of posts and stories and we get such a response. Thank you to all.
Yes, thank you. And if you have an odd eBay selling or shipping story you want to share with your fellow sellers, why not call us at 888-723-4630.
Why not indeed? 888-723-4630. And you can call that number any day of the week, anytime, and you can leave your story or question or comment, and we'd love to put it on the air.
And if you're not a call on the phone person or just want to talk to two guys in Vermont, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
You and I don't live in Vermont. We might as well. And now it's time for your 3-point podcast checklist.
Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
These are trying times we live in. Remember to stop and consider what another person, maybe a seller or a buyer, might be going through in their life right now. Always assume the best. Always act with kindness and patience.
Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
And on our next episode, we'll talk to someone who's an expert at getting the most out of an event like eBay Open. It can be confusing sometimes, what with all the different presentations going on at the same time and, you know, networking and seller panels. Dexter Bowling will be here to share his advice on how to make the most out of a 2-day or 3-day agenda of any event so that it works for you.
We'd like to again thank our guest this week, Michael Swope.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411. See you next week, Brian.
See you next week, Griff.